You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The preference of parents in parts of China and India to have a boy rather than a girl has led to decades of sex selection that has left about 160 million females missing from the population, the consequences of which are now being felt in these countries. Many attribute the crisis to China's strict one-child policy and the extreme poverty in rural areas of India, where having a girl can lead to a family's financial ruin. But journalist Mara Vistendahl says that the causes of this crisis extend far beyond politics and poverty. Her new book, Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men, explores the history behind the gender imbalance, its spread into other countries, and its detrimental consequences. It's published by Public Affairs, and I'm very pleased to welcome Mara Vistendahl, the Beijing-based correspondent for Science Magazine, to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, the sex ratio in China is 120 boys to every 100 girls. How does that compare to the global ratio?
Well, the natural human sex ratio at birth is 105 boys for every 100 girls. That actually makes up for the fact that males are more likely to die in higher numbers throughout their lifetimes. But now the global ratio is 107 boys for every 100 girls. And so there's so much sex selection happening in Asia and parts of Eastern Europe that it's skewed the ratio of the entire world.
You say that having a boy is actually a preference throughout the world, with some exceptions.
That's right. Even in the United States until the 1970s, parents told researchers or they indicated through their behavior that they wanted at least one boy. Unfortunately, that desire is pretty universal. It varies, of course, from one culture to the next, but many parents around the world want boys.
But now in the United States, parents in this country, are we the exception where people are saying that they prefer a girl?
Well, in the West, yes, some parents are starting to say that they would like girls. And in parts of Europe as well, there has been a shift. But in the developing world, especially, that preference for boys remains.
And what do you think that preference is? Are there different reasons in different parts of the world?
Different reasons. We're looking at Albania, China, Vietnam, India, Azerbaijan, Georgia, and these are hugely different cultures.
Different religions, too.
Different religions. It crosses religious lines, crosses cultural lines, crosses national lines. So, really, it varies from one culture to the next.
So if it's not the one-child policy in China or poverty in rural India that's led to the gender imbalance, what are the reasons there?
Well, there are a few things that Albania and China and India have in common, and it's really this triangle of trends. So one is that the birth rate has fallen very dramatically over the past few years, past 30, 40 years. In China, that was because of the one-child policy in part, but it birth rate also fell in India and also fell in South Korea, Albania. The average South Korean woman had 6 children. In 1960, and now she has just over one. At the same time, new technology has come in, access to ultrasound, ultrasound got to the point where it could determine the sex of a baby in the second trimester sex of a fetus the early 80s. And also, one thing that's not so talked about in the U.S. is that abortion's relatively pervasive in these countries, and there are pretty high abortion rates.
But the birth rate in Europe is also lower, but we don't hear about this kind of disparity there. And abortion is available in most European countries.
That's true.
Albania is a European country, but mm-hmm. I'm talking about France, Italy, Sweden, Norway, England.
Mm-hmm. Well, demographers now actually see sex selection as a transitional phenomenon, as something that countries today are going through as they develop, if certain conditions are in place. So Europe, the birth rate did not fall so dramatically. And at the same time, the context surrounding abortion today is very different in the West.
You write that middle and upper class families are more likely to select for sex. Don't people have fewer children as they move up the economic ladder?
Right. That's part of it. That's part of it. And it's a bit of a paradox because if you've read reports on gender imbalance in the past, it's tends to be portrayed as something that poor women in rural communities are doing as a kind of a problem of entrenched discrimination. People can't get past these traditions. And research has shown that's just not the case.
Well, people with more means have a better opportunity to learn whether the baby will be a boy or a girl.
That's part of it as well. Mm-hmm. Educated women in India are much more likely to select for sons than illiterate women.
Are there ultrasound machines in rural villages in China and India?
There are now. And, you know, the census results for both countries just came out. And one of the worrying aspects of the results is that sex selection spreading to new states, new parts of China as well. So it seems to be something that starts with the wealthy, starts with the upper classes, and kind of trickles down to the rest of society. You know, it's a little bit like any other technology, like an MP3 player, like an iPod.
Well, historically, has sex selection abortion been more prevalent in rural or urban areas? I would assume urban.
It starts in urban areas. That happened in the Caucasus countries, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Georgia, happening in Albania now, in Tirana, the capital. And that happened in East Asia as well.
But if sex selection is linked to economic development, how do you explain sex selection occurring for decades in very poor rural areas?
Well, again, it's something that has started in urban areas. And
we just haven't noticed that? We only noticed it when it went into the rural areas?
No, I think really
the
press...
Do we blame poor people for something that everybody is engaging in?
I think that's it's an easier explanation to make. And for journalists looking to explain this problem, it's easy to go to a poor village, talk to women about why they want sons. But if you look at the numbers, and any demographer or sociologist in China and India will tell you as much, it's happening in wealthy or middle-class areas.
My guest is Mara Vissendahl. Her book, A Natural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. Aren't there cultural and religious reasons for boys being preferred over girls? For example, in farming communities, the boys are more likely to assume a lot of the difficult work at a very early age, and then later they're expected to take care of their parents because they are the wage earners.
There are definitely cultural reasons. But one of the things that interested me in this topic was that I was living in China, and this is a time when women in China, women across Asia, are better off in many ways than ever before. More women in professional careers, more women in PhD programs, more than men, in fact.
And working in the factories.
As well, yeah, the big part of the labor force. And when I went, I went around Asia talking to parents about their decisions, about how they're shaping their families. One woman in a kind of booming city in Jiangsu province in China, she told me about her decision to abort two female fetuses. And she said, It's really a matter of gaining face, of having other people respect you,
and they respect you more if you have a boy.
That's what she said in her city, in her community. It was something that's become pervasive. The sex ratio at birth there was around 3 boys for every 2 girls, so very skewed. You know, many more boys than girls in the classrooms, in schools. And she and her husband were not among the poorest people in that area at all.
Well, what has the Chinese government done about this? They must have noticed that there was this growing gender gap.
The Chinese government is concerned. I think it would be hard not to be concerned because by the 2020s, there will be 24 million so-called surplus males, millions more men than women. the Indian government's concerned as well, but it's not priority number one now.
Well, they've done things like banning the use of ultrasound testing, ultrasound testing for sex selective abortions, but they don't really enforce those things, do they?
No, there are crackdowns, but they're not sustained. It is illegal to determine sex. They've said as a society, nobody's going to know. But the crackdowns are not, they're just not sustained from one year to the next.
Well, couldn't they also come up with some government policies to support families with female children?
There are policies. There are. In China and India, they are paying parents to have girls. I keep talking about China and India, but in the Caucasus countries, there just is almost no recognition of the problem yet. Same in Albania.
You mentioned Armenia, Albania, Azerbaijan, and we're seeing similar ratios.
Yeah, the figure for Armenia in 2005 was 120 boys for every 100 girls. So that was actually worse than China that year.
And we're talking in the case of Armenia, of a Christian country. Albania and Azerbaijan have Muslim majorities. So what do they have in common? Is this not religious? Is this cultural?
Well, again, they are very different countries. Again, it comes down to the birth rate decreasing, the new technology coming in, and abortion being relatively pervasive. And just to qualify that, I believe in a woman's right to have an abortion, but the context surrounding it's very different in Asia and parts of Eastern Europe as well.
Well, does sex selection always involve abortions?
Most of the time it does today. It won't forever. We're actually hard at work developing new forms of sex selection in the U.S. It's now possible to select the sex of your embryo during in vitro fertilization. And I think it for today, though, it's mostly abortion.
A listener, Elizabeth, left this comment on our show page. She says the solution is simple. Start paying females equally. Parents will want them more if their economic prospects are equal. You're nodding your head.
Well,
because it doesn't work in this country. We have pay inequality here, and yet we're not seeing the same sort of thing that we're seeing in Asia and the Caucasus.
That's right. And it is a time when in many ways women are doing very well in Chinese and Indian societies. Also South Korea, Taiwan, you're seeing many women preferred for professional positions. But, offering equal pay, it comes down to what parents are thinking about today.
Well, are these traditions that go back a long time that we're only becoming more aware of today because of the easy access to abortions? Or is this something that has started developing in recent times?
I think, in fact, that women probably want sons less than they did 40 or 50 years ago. It's just that there's this fertility pressure today. And this is often portrayed as something that happens overseas, doesn't affect us, and doesn't involve us. And the U.S. actually played a role in introducing sex selection technology in Asia.
And we'll take a little break and come back to that and the pressures that the West perhaps applied to Asian countries that we're now seeing odd consequences from. My guest is Mara Vistendahl, H-V-I-S-T-E-N-D-A-H-L. Her book, Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. It's published by Public Affairs. We're back with Mara Vistendahl, the Beijing-based correspondent for Science Magazine. Her award-winning writing has also appeared in Harper's, Scientific American, Popular Science, and the Financial Times, also Foreign Policy. She has written a book called Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. It's published by Public Affairs. You write that the Western world is largely to blame for sex selection spreading in Asia. What role has it played?
Well, not not entirely to blame, but we did play a role. You know, back in the 1960s and 70s, population growth was the issue that everybody was talking about. It was a major concern here. And there was a lot of focus on from, you know, every organizations from the Rockefeller Foundation to the World Bank to Planned Parenthood, which back then was a very different organization, on how to reduce the birth rate abroad in particular. And these organizations were very focused on Asia.
Well, that's because China had already gone past 1 billion people and India was fast approaching it. Now it has gone past 1 billion.
There were real reasons for caring
about. And overpopulation is a serious problem, isn't
it? It is a problem. It is definitely a problem. But some of the strategies that were floated at the time were really draconian. They were horrible strategies that were on the table. It was an era where men were forcibly sterilized. Abortions and contraceptive use was incentivized. Health workers were paid based on how many women they could convince to accept intrauterine devices. People were talking about flying a plane over India and spraying it with a contraceptive aerial mist. I don't know what that is, but it's scary tactics.
Wasn't there concern in this country that overpopulation could breed and spread communism?
There was, yes. There was support from both the right and the left for population control. Environmentalists also made up the movement, but it was really had a broad coalition.
But I can't imagine that the one-child policy in China was a direct result of pressure from the United States.
The one-child policy is a bit more complicated. It grew out of Western ideology to some degree. I've interviewed Chinese demographers who told me as much. This was the issue of the time, and China wanted to do something about it. But so against the backdrop of all these strategies, some of them coercive, the idea emerged to guarantee couples the sex of their choice when they had children. Organizations had done studies looking at reasons that people in Asia, in particular, didn't want to use contraception. And one of the things that came up was that people kept having children in order to get a boy.
Mm-hmm. And in India, a girl can be a real economic burden on a family. She's expected to bring a dowry to a marriage. So they prefer to have a boy, the one who receives the dowry?
That's one of the explanations that's given today for why sex selection occurs. I don't think it's a great excuse because, again, we're talking about wealthy families. But back in the 60s and back in the 70s, people in the U.S. fully knew about the desire for sons in Asia. It was talked about everywhere from the National Institutes of Health to the pages of science, which I write for now.
Well, the repercussions of having a society made up of mostly men goes beyond them not being able to find partners. What are some of the other consequences?
Well, men are, the first generation of surplus men, bachelors, have grown up, and they are going to great lengths to get wives. Men from South Korea and Taiwan are flying to Vietnam on marriage tours where they pay one fee that includes their trip and the price of a wife.
But Vietnam also has sex selection. So mm-hmm. Does that just mean that it makes it tougher for a Vietnamese male to find a wife because Vietnamese women are going elsewhere?
Oh, definitely. I visited a village in the Mekong Delta where so many women have left for Taiwan that locals refer to it as Taiwan Island. There are almost no women left. And people are starting to see it as a way to make money, sadly. Families that have daughters abroad have more satellite dishes, more motorcycles than other families.
You interviewed several foreign-bought brides.
I did.
Are they happy about this? What are their lives like after marriage?
Well, it's really difficult for them. You know, they arrive not speaking the same language, having a totally different culture, dependent on their husbands for immigration status. And I do think not all of the men are horrible by any means. Some just want to get married. But there are definitely cases of abuse. I talked to one woman outside Taipei who she arrived after her husband bought her and just discovered he was abusive. His parents were horrible toward her. She couldn't leave the marriage because she had no choice. Eventually, she did get a divorce, and she lost custody of her children.
Isn't there also concern when there's a surplus of males that leads to crime and other kinds of problems?
Mm-hmm. If you look back historically at societies where men outnumbered women,
like the American West,
the Wild West in the U.S., for example, it was not a great thing. Actually, in the Wild West, there were reformers who went out and saw, I mean, just soaring crime rates, murder rates, prostitution was rampant. There, you know, when people were talking at the time about how to solve the problem, one of the strategies that came up was to ship in women. And there was a woman called Eliza Farnham who actually set up a boat to sail from eastern U.S. to the west.
There's a musical called The Seven Brides for Seven, what is it, for Seven Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, they're inspired by the biblical story of the Sabine women, and they kidnap these women. And there is a certain amount of kidnapping going on.
That's happening today in Asia. That's right.
Although in China, there also is kidnapping of boys.
As well, that's for a different reason, because of the one-child policy and the desire for sons still. But children are being kidnapped. Girls are being kidnapped. Women as well. A lot of trafficking going on. And there is some evidence that crime has risen as well as a result of the sex ratio imbalance.
My guest is Mara Vistendahl. Her book, Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. It's published by Public Affairs. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Some economists have even said that the imbalance creates a greater value for women. Does it turn out that way?
Yeah. Economists like to talk about supply and demand and apply it to men and women. And it has not really turned out that way, maybe only in the crudest sense. So women are scarce now, and they cost more, but they don't control their own value. People are buying them, people are selling them, and many are more at risk now.
Well, what does this all mean for global demographic shifts, given that the populations of China and India make up one-third of the world's population? Will men immigrate to other countries? Are we seeing that happening now?
I can't say. Early Chinese immigration in the 19th century actually came about at a time when men outnumbered women in China, but not on this level. I mean, we haven't seen anything like this before.
Well, the Chinese population in this country, because of our own immigration policies, was largely male until the laws were changed, I think, in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say. It wasn't predicted that men would go to the lengths that they are to find women, and it's difficult to say what will happen with migration.
Well, what happens in this country? Are we seeing similar patterns in Chinese and Indian families in the United States?
We are, yes. It seems that sex selection doesn't go away among families that immigrate to the U.S. The sex ratios at birth are also pretty skewed. We know this from looking at the census. What I actually think that shows that this is something that development doesn't fix. That even if you know, even as people become citizens, even as people move to new lands, there's no one-child policy here. That still sex selection has a kind of strong hold.
Asian immigrant women in the United States have the lowest fertility rate, but the highest abortion rate among immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see the same factors shaping that trend here. But again, sex selection is also happening among non-immigrant Americans. It's happening among white Americans, and that's something that we should talk about as well.
Now, I asked you earlier about dowries, but a lot of listeners are writing in to inquire about the role of dowries in all of this in India. Did we miss something? Is there anything more to say?
About dowry?
Yeah.
Well, dowry is it's a kind of local explanation for what's happening in India. In every country, there are local reasons for why people want a boy. But that doesn't explain why you see the same trend in all of these countries at the same time.
One listener suggests that this might have something to do with carrying on the family name, in addition to being breadwinners. Of course, that doesn't apply in some countries. In some Scandinavian countries, a woman doesn't. She winds up with a complicated name. She takes her mother's name or her father's name. I guess she says she's Lavrin's daughter or something like that.
Again, that's also a local explanation. I think it's become easier to talk about those issues than to talk about abortion, to talk about birth rates, and talk about U.S. involvement.
Well, what about sex selection in this country? Isn't it illegal to have an abortion if you don't if you prefer a different sex for your fetus?
Anti-abortion groups in the U.S. are hard at work passing bans on sex-selective abortion state by state. I think those bans are not genuine. I think they are, they're trying to establish a precedent for the fetus being alive so that they can push through further restrictions on abortion. And, sex selection for boys is happening among a very small percentage of the population now, nothing like what we see in Asia.
I would imagine that if I were a male who came of age during this time in Asia, that I might have a very different attitude when I had a child. I don't know if anybody's polling men about whether they would prefer to have daughters now.
Well, that's interesting. If you look at the sex ratio at birth among foreign brides in Taiwan, they're actually more likely to give birth to males than the rest of the population. So you would think that after having this experience, both for the women and the men, of the men not being able to find women, that would go away. But I think it's a little bit like here we talk a lot about environmental protection. But when it comes to getting rid of our own SUV or making difficult decisions for our own family, that's something else.
Why do you suppose gender imbalance hasn't received more attention on the level of, let's say, climate change or HIV/AIDS?
I think the link to abortion is very difficult for reproductive rights groups to tackle. There is a history in the U.S. of defunding the United Nations Population Fund. It's a time now where abortion politics are very contentious, all sorts of restrictions being pushed through. And groups on the left are reluctant to take this on. There are a few exceptions of groups who see this is an important issue for the world, and we can talk about abortion in a complex way. And it also brings up the question of does the right to choice include the right to choose the sex of your baby?
But if I were the premier of China, I'd be looking at this and saying, boy, are we going to have problems some very soon down the line?
Government leaders are worried now. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, China, the government's very concerned with maintaining stability. That's priority number one. And these issues that are going to show their effects in 10 to 20 years, they should fall by the wayside. You know, it's not being addressed in right now.
Mara Vistendahl does address those issues in her new book, Vistendahl, spelled H-V-I-S-T-E-N-D-A-H-L. Where does that name come from?
Norway.
And her book is Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. It's published by Public Affairs. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on the show, Leonard.